Welcome to the NLP View with your host, Donna Blinston. Each week, Donna will explore how the techniques of NLP can help improve your personal and professional life. And now, here's your host, Donna Blinston.
Hello, and welcome to the NLP View. My name is Donna Blinston. Today's guest is Olive Hickmott, a health coach, master practitioner of NLP, energetic NLP, thought pattern management, and an author of multiple best-selling books, namely, You Too Can Do Health, Recover Your Energy, Seeing Spells Achieving, and Bridges to Success. On today's show, I'll be discussing with Olive how NLP can be used to help the carers of dementia sufferers, to help them better understand dementia and Alzheimer's from a behavioural point of view. These insights are designed to give the carers a different perspective, enabling them to improve the quality of everyone's experience. Dementia is a term that is used to describe a collection of symptoms, including memory loss, problems with reasoning and communication skills, and a reduction in an individual's abilities, and skills in carrying out activities of daily life. Neuro-linguistic programming, NLP, is a way of understanding how we use language to program our brain. NLP helps us to understand how we process the information that comes into our brains and how we create a simplified version of our experience in our minds. Through using the techniques of NLP, we can improve the person's quality of life and provide them with more independence by removing any possible frustrations that he or she might be experiencing. So I'd like to welcome to the show Olive Hickmott. Hello, Olive.
Hello, Donna, and thank you very much for inviting me on the show.
Oh, Olive, it's an honour for me. The work that you're doing is profound, both from from the NLP world. It's just inspiring the ways you're taking the work and advancing it all. It's brilliant. And from a nursing background, it just touches my heart, you know. I see and work with people who live with dementia every day, and to know that someone is there to help support them to cope better, because we often forget the carers themselves. They're often the ones that need that support, because if they're not looking after themselves, then how can they really support the person who's suffering with the dementia? So for me, it's all my honour, Olive. So can you explain to our audience a bit about yourself and your background?
Yes, I'm a health coach. I work with people with chronic health issues and learning difficulties. I started off life as a software engineer and became a manager and had a successful corporate life until 1990, when I started my own business. And I rapidly got into coaching, and in particular health coaching, which is using all the skills that you learn as a coach but directing them at health challenges. And I found that just an absolutely fascinating area. So I did my NLP and professional coaching qualifications, and then I was ill myself, and I discovered that my energy was really blocked after a major operation, and then I discovered energetic NLP, which is a synthesis of NLP, the best of NLP and the best of the energy spiritual systems. So that's how I came to health coaching, and I do have a very different perspective on things. I tend to sort of hold the space that anything's possible if we only knew how to do it. And so
Very true.
I've produced books and CDs, and everything I do is easy for what I call the man or woman in the street. You don't need to be an expert in it. They're very easy to follow for people dealing with various health challenges.
That is one thing that is very important to me. It's the ability to be able to remove the psychobabble, for want for a better word, that's attached to things. Because I think people are often scared off and they don't use things that could benefit them because they think it's going to be complex or in too much detail, or it's not going to be able to relate to them. And yep. I've read your books, and the Seeing Spells Achieving particularly transformed me when I first read it, and again when I've reread it recently, as with your other books. And you do have that natural gift of being able to explain things in real life terms, which is a credit to you, really.
I tend to explain things also by example, because examples are what works for me, and stories about what people have achieved and those sort of things. And that matches my learning style, I suppose. And people always find lots of stories really, really sort of inspiring, and also enables them to think, oh, gosh, I could do this.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Can you explain where you started your journey into looking at how you can use NLP for the carers of dementia patients, but also for the dementia patients themselves? How was it that you started along those lines?
Yep, absolutely. I can remember it very clearly. I was doing my NLP training, and I met a guy who was also another student, who by the name of Peter from Dementia Cares, and he we had breakfast together one morning, and he was telling me about his work, and I was learning NLP at the same time, so we're in the middle of this course, and I'm going, but actually we can use the NLP tools that we're learning every day on this course and sort of put them into slightly reverse, and I'll explain to you what I mean about that later, but okay. We can use those NLP tools to understand what's going on, because we're being trained in how to use NLP tools for changing memories and for things that have gone on in the past that we want to change. And quite suddenly I realized we've got this whole group of people who were living in the past and were permanently there, so we could use these tools sort of inside out, as I call it, and all these light bulbs kept coming on in my head. And NLP to me is all about understanding your own experience, and once you can understand your own experience, then with a bit of help from people who have studied this, so you can learn new skills, and so then the world is your oyster, if you like. Then when I'd done that course, I didn't do anything with it for a couple of years. But at the same time, having done that course, I was just out of hospital from peritonitis. And I had shared a room for 2 weeks with a wonderful woman called Irene, who was in the surgical ward because she had had an accident and banged the back of her head and had a large gash in it. But at the same time, she also had dementia. And Irene taught me so much about what her experience was of dementia just by observing her for a fortnight. And then I did some training as a dementia champion. And I suddenly realized that the information I was getting from all sorts of different directions was going to be really useful for carers. And it was like it was going to be a shortcut for them to, you know, when they got to care for the second person, they might be experts, but this could be a shortcut when they were caring for one of their parents and they had never seen anything like this before. And so I started developing models of what would help people improve their understanding. And I also realized that there was an enormous resource out there amongst carers who were already doing this with their families. And so what I wanted people to do was, oh, that makes sense. Now I know what to do. And that was where I was heading for. Because if to a carer they can understand what's going on, then they can start being creative about how they can best deal with it.
And how did you find that the people that you were starting to work with and discuss, how were they taking it on board? What was their responses to it?
Well, I just started talking to people about the models I got, and the amount of people that said, "Oh, that makes sense. I wish somebody had given me that insight before. It would have just caused a lot less heartache." And I suddenly realised that the more we could do that, and the more we could feedback good ideas, then the more we could help the carers, and in turn, the more that helps the people who are struggling with dementia. And so we were sharing information that works, if you like. And this was nothing to do with sort of brain chemistry and degeneration. This was about behaviour. And in my experience, people have said to me here that the doctors are incredibly articulate about what's happening to my family, but it's all about science, and it doesn't relate to what I'm dealing with on a day-to-day basis about somebody who won't eat, for example. And basically what I was trying to do was to help people improve the quality of life for themselves and the people they were caring for in the autumn of their life, essentially.
Would you mind sharing one of those models with the audience so that they can get a feel for the models themselves?
Yeah, one of the first models, and this is slightly difficult to do on the radio. So, what I want you to do is to imagine a four-drawer filing cabinet, and you may have heard this analogy before, but it's quite useful. And so, in the bottom drawer of the four-drawer filing cabinet, you have all the information about when you were zero age, when you were just born, up to 20 years old, say. In the next drawer up, you have 21 years old to 40. The next drawer up, you have 41 years old to 64. And in the top drawer, you've got 65 years old to today. That's just an example of the numbers to give you an idea of the four-drawer filing cabinet. Now, all new information tries to come in the top of the drawer of the filing cabinet. But if you have been dealing with dementia for some period of time, let's assume that you haven't really got access to the information since you were 65 until today. So all new information will try and get into that drawer of the filing cabinet, but will be rejected, so it goes on the floor. And one of the things that people often I've so often heard is, people ask how old they are continuously. Well, when I was in hospital with the wonderful Irene, she had this question on her lips most of the day. And, of course, I was getting over a major operation, so I hadn't got anything to do. And I do appreciate that's not the same place that the average carer is, but I got all the time in the world. And she used to say to me, "How old am I?" And I go, "Now, Irene, when were you born?" So I got her to remember from the past. And she came out with something like 1910 or something. And I go, "Okay, Irene, it's now 2005 or something. So therefore you are whatever age she was." And she went, "Thank you very much." And of course, 2 minutes later, she would ask me the same question. And we'd go through this whole thing again. And the really interesting thing I found was that after two or three times, or maybe even four or five times, she would start to look at me and go, "I have asked you this question before, haven't I?" And I'd go, "Yes," with a smile.
Mm-hmm.
And that satisfied her, because she knew she'd got the information. But I was tapping into what she knew. The one bit of information she always knew was when she was born. Mm-hmm. Never failed on that. But of course, the new information, if you think how old you are, that changes every year. So that's always new information.
Yeah.
And so that gets destroyed and lost. You can't access it. And what happens with your brain is that you lose the most recent information first, as I think probably most people who are caring for people with dementia realize, that it's all the new information that's going. Now, that model, that really simple model, leads to some really interesting insights. Because let's take for a minute that you were married in the second filing cabinet, which is 21 to 40 years old. So you still know you are married, and the pictures you have of the person you are married in your visual recall, your imagination, are probably pictures from the age of 20 to 60, something like that. So the people who don't recognize their spouse anymore is because the man, let's say a man, standing next to you at the bed doesn't look like the pictures you can remember from when you were 20 to 40. He's in the 65 filing cabinet, and those pictures of him are lost.
Yeah.
And so that becomes a really, really scary event in your life. And so another one that can happen is that you know you've got grandchildren. And, of course, what do grandchildren do? They have a habit of growing up very fast and changing. And the what happens is you don't recognize the grandchildren that come in to see you, but you know you've got grandchildren. So that gives you a horrible sort of disconnect and fragmentation of your memory.
I think that model in itself is amazing. That explains so much. And I think as a carer, and to be that person who's there at the bedside, who isn't being recognised, can be so emotionally draining. And it's almost, from an identity point of view of the carer, it's taking away their sense of identity because that person isn't recognising you. And even though logically they'll understand it's the dementia, they'll still be wanting the mum or the dad or whoever it is to recognise them when they walk into the room in the same way that they used to.
Absolutely.
So for the carer to be able to understand that, they do know you, they do know who you are, and the memories from the past are there. It's just not the pictures of today relating to the memories of the past.
Absolutely.
Will help seal so many of those daily things that can grind on you.
Exactly. Another one that happens is that, of course, if you're caring for your mother, she will remember you longer than she remembers your husband, for example, because your husband is in a more recent filing cabinet than you are. Because you probably didn't marry him until at least you were 25. And so if mum suddenly doesn't like husband because she doesn't know who he is, that creates another loss of emotion in the carer and just thinking, oh, well, she doesn't like him anymore. This is terrible, you know, and be more inclined to dump somebody in a home because they're fighting with your husband. And you need all the support you can get from your husband. But once you realise it's the filing cabinet thing, it actually makes such good sense that you can go, it's all right, he's in the wrong filing cabinet.
And it can also, it almost turns it into a humour.
Yeah.
And it's that humour enables you to cope with so many things. And because of the severity of it and the repetitive and almost mundane, which isn't not the nicest word, but it's that continuousness of the disease process, being able to laugh and to joke about what's happening and being able to say, you know, you just stuck down in a different drawer. It transforms that situation and takes away the negative energies that will naturally float around that room, which just they spiral with each other, don't they? It's just
absolutely
like a vicious circle that you're trapped in.
Absolutely. You have to. I've subtitled my e-book Learning to Live in Different Time Zones. And I think that's a really important concept. Or it might even be different dimensions, I don't know. Because when you can start to live, the carer is in one time zone and the person with dementia is in another time zone. And the other thing is that they're probably much happier in their time zone than they are in today.
Yeah.
Because things were better in that time zone, because people frequently go back to a good place. Yeah. So if you can talk to them about their good place, then life is so much less stressful.
I've got an example of that when I was doing a night shift on a ward about 5-6 years ago now. And we had a man who was with us who was in quite advanced stages of his dementia, and he was very destructive. mainly because he was lost. It was very much a different time zone to what we were, and he was wanting to go to work at 2:30, 3:00 in the morning with the lights on, getting dressed and going to make his breakfast in his house, which was the ward that we were on at the time. And when I started talking to him about his job, he was worked in the post office, in the sorting office.
Yeah.
So I went into the office, emptied all of our drawers, and had the drawers open and put A down to F down the side, and gave him a load of paperwork to file. And whereas the previous night staff had had horrendous shifts, basically arguing with him to go back to bed and trying to coerce him back into bed, whereas him as an independent man, who very proud, enjoyed his job, not wanting to be told what to do by younger people, was having previous problems, I was able to just let him sit in the office, and he very quickly sorted through all of our paperwork and was happy as Larry. And because he'd been there for 2 or 3 hours, he was quite happy then to go and have a brew and a rest back in his bed at about 4:30 in the morning.
Right.
And it took that acknowledging that he was in a post office, because that was his reality, regardless
Absolutely.
Of the fact that my reality was it was 2:30 in the morning and there's another 29 patients on the ward.
What I always say to people is that they're nearly the patients are nearly always right, but they're in the wrong
always
time
right.
zones.
Yes.
And it's one of the skills that they teach us in NLP, is to be able to build rapport with the individual, come from where they're coming from, and pace them so that if they're in a different reality, is that you join them in that reality. And that's how you will improve communication with them. Just on them moving into your reality as a sharp shock, they won't be able to do it. And that is the same with anybody that we're working with using NLP as a therapy.
It's one of my favourite questions that I've that's within NLP is of what has to be happening in their world for what they're saying to make sense.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
As soon as you take, I mean, that applies to dementia, to teaching, to everything you can put it to, every context. As soon as you can step back from where you are and take yourself out of that situation and acknowledge that something must be happening for that person to be responding in that way.
Absolutely.
Take that second position. It transforms the communication and that respecting that other person.
I think once I tell people they're going to be the patient's going to be right, and you just got to get used to this, and just be curious, because in some time zone or another they are right, and once they start actually going down that curiosity route, the whole world changes for them, completely opens up. I talked to somebody recently whose father lives in the north of England somewhere. And he said he was having real problems talking to him. And he said, you know, whenever he went to see him, it was getting more and more difficult. And after he talked to me, he said, okay, fine. I know he's an expert on something or other. I can't remember what it was. And he said, I'll just talk to him about that all the time. And it mm-hmm. absolutely transformed his relationship with Dad. Because whenever he went to see him, he talked about something that was 20 years old, but Dad was a total expert in, completely lucid, and could hold an extremely good conversation about. And he said, well, if that's where we're going to live for the next 20 years, you know, for the rest of his life, that's fine by me.
And it's those moments that are precious, isn't it?
Exactly. And he said he improved his relationship with his dad because, Dad's talking about his specialist subject, basically.
Yeah. And that will empower his dad so much, and it will reignite memories for him and make him, bring him back into his version of today's reality, which is, well, it's that quality of life that you aspire to with the work that you're doing. There's a lot, I hear a lot of how people, the carers or especially the family, are watching the person disappear. And rather than watching them disappear, why don't they keep them alive by going back in the years in the same way that you've just explained with this gentleman? Because that will fulfill fulfill them, their conversational needs, but it'll also enable them to learn so much more because there'll be things that they'll be discussing that they might not have known as much about.
Yeah, and they do, and the carers do have to be very creative. And when they're dealing with something like somebody keeps going back to thinking their wife's still alive and she isn't or something like that, they do have to get to be really creative about it. But some of the other models we've got, which I'm not going to have time to go through, but we actually give people some real insights into why people are saying the things they are. And once you can get into that space with them, life becomes so much clearer.
It does. It does. It's, well, I can't emphasize it enough. And you just mentioned before of how you're doing work on your recent e-books that you're publicizing, a series of e-books to show the carers how you can support, how they can be supported with the NLP tools. I believe, is it the first 50 that sign up free before December?
Yes.
Can you tell our audience more about them?
Yes,
and where
certainly.
They can get hold of them and your
I'm actually doing one e-book on dementia, and you can find it at www.dementia.simpleskills.co.uk. And I'll repeat that again in a minute if you haven't got a pen. But it comes out in instalments. And what I'm finding is that I send out instalments of it, and then I get much more information back from carers and their feedback. And so then there's even more information for the next instalment. I think it will probably go on forever, the rate I'm going at the moment. And it's a very interesting example of true generative collaboration between me and the carers. And the carers have got such a wealth of knowledge that it really is a shame that everybody has to start again from scratch with their own loved ones. So I look at this as being the quick start idea. And
brilliant.
What I'm sort of very keen on is that we're not talking about products. We're not talking about stuff to give people. What we're talking about is ways of looking at what is going on that can really help you. So that's what it's about. And I'll give you the website again. It's www.dementia.simpleskills.co.uk. And you just go on there and sign up for the ebook, and it will come to you at probably quite irregular intervals over the next few months as we get more and more information, more and more, and we generate more models of things that can help you.
Thank you ever so much, Olive. It has been a true pleasure having you on the show today. The work you're doing is fabulous, and everyone, connect with her via her website and also through her social media, which is at Olive Hitmott, if you're going via Twitter, and also her Facebook page. So again, to our audience, I want to thank you for tuning in. If you would like to learn more about NLP, then please tune in each week and also visit my website, which is www.donnablinston.com, where you can pick up a pocket guide, that I'm recently starting to write on how we can use NLP to cope with the holiday season, tips on how you can use NLP to help clear your mind. And also you can pick up my best-selling book, which is Psychobabble, a straightforward plain English guide to the benefits of NLP. Thank you for tuning in. I look forward to speaking with you all again soon.